Hello and welcome to the Cynic Weekly. I'm your host as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and this week I've got a fabulous panel. I was going to make some big like intro about the presidential election and call some Annie Trump, but you know, I couldn't be bothered putting much time and effort into it. But Christopher Somani is here.
You didn't do it because you're a bit thick, Louis, and that would require some wit.
That was really no nice.
I was
a bit harsh.
You called me Trump, and it got my back up.
Well, aye. Anyway, moving swiftly on. It's Sleepy Joe himself, Barry Gallagher. How are you?
Not too bad, mate. Thanks for having me. You've got my vote, my man. Cheers. Thank you. Vote early, vote often.
And making his debut, I'm not going to liken you to any US political person. It's Callum Gordon. Callum, thanks for joining us.
How are we doing? Thanks for having me.
No bother. So I've got a bit of housekeeping to do for once. Usually we just get fired into it, but there's a bit of housekeeping to do. Firstly, we probably don't do it enough on the Cynic Weekly, but the cynic.co has got a hell of a lot of material just now. We've got a few kind of new shows and things that I've been listening to kind of for the first time, things like The Deep Dive, which Claire Wilde, the Cynic's very own Claire Wilde, is the host of, with a great panel. Ruth joined me and Somani on the reaction at the weekend. She was excellent, and she's on The Deep Dive, so you can hear more of her there. The Biscuit Tin, there's a new Biscuit Tin episode out with Martin Friel. That was excellent, really, really good. I listened to that last night while I was doing a bit of painting. So definitely check that out. There's the usual shite, things like The Agenda and all that. And they're like wee guys, you know, trying to say how they're the premier podcast and all that. Aye, less about them. But the kind of newer stuff, definitely things to check out. So if you've not subscribed yet, please do. I'm going to pass you over to Claire just now because she has an update on the Celtic women's team for us.
Hiya, just Claire here, crashing the weekly with a wee update about the women's team who played Hearts at the weekend. We would have loved to have been able to cover the game as normal and were told it would be streaming on BBC Sport. However, we also thought it was going to be a clash with the semi-final as the original scheduled time was 3 p.m. It was then changed to 11 a.m, but for some still unexplained reason, the BBC at the last minute decided not to stream it. While all this was very frustrating and information was scarce about it, the good news is that the girls put 10 goals past Hearts, and the highlights are up on the BBC Sport website, so you can check those out. Notably, Spanish signing Anita scored her first in the hoops, and Sarah Ewan scored her 50th goal for the club during the match. In a season we hope will be close, to get so many on the score sheet's fantastic, a great boost ahead of the next league game, which is against Spartans. Currently, this game is a home game for Celtic, scheduled to be played at K Park on the 8th of November at 2 p.m. However, if there's any updates, we will let you know. We also have no idea at this stage whether you'll be able to catch that on any streaming service or BBC Alba, but we will keep you posted as soon as we have any news on that. And we will be doing our best to cover that. Hopefully we'll get to go to the game. Now, back to Louis with the rest of the show.
Thanks very much, Claire. And we also have news of the Cynic's own Frankie Mitchell. She has a new shop open for her illustrations. It's made by frankie.bigcartel.com, so check that out if you're looking for her. Some of her illustrations are fantastic. And lastly, the Meyer CSC contacted me to they are promoting or protesting rather against the suspension of the school football league, which might be happening. It's under consideration because of coronavirus. However, grassroots football and boys clubs are allowed to continue. So obviously school football is massive for loads of kind of demographics of kids who take part. So they're trying to raise awareness of the fact that it might be getting shut down. So if you get them on Twitter, you'll find out more information about it. I think that's all the housekeeping. Time to get to the football. So,
well done, Barry Hogan.
I know, thank you. So, Barry Gallagher, Lille 2, Celtic 2. We go to France. We were 2-0 up. We came away with a point. On reflection, after, you know, we're almost a week on, What are your thoughts on that result? And do you think we'd a lot more positives to take rather than negatives, considering, despite the fact that we were 2-0 up?
Yeah, definitely. I think we'd all been crying out sort of for a reaction of sorts to a really sort of traumatic week or so. And Celtic were brilliant. I thought the way that we set up, it's been discussed on other pods, but that was a sort of blueprint for how we should, essentially how we should set up going to Ibrox, I think. For 45 minutes, we were superb. I thought we defended excellently for that 45 minutes and we looked every part of the team. Obviously, they came back into it as they always were going to do. But I think when it got to 2-2, you were just feared the worst that it was going to be the same old story. But to actually hang on, I think it was really positive and it's kind of given us a grounding now. Obviously, we'll go on to talk about the Aberdeen game. But yeah, it's kind of brought us all up, I think.
Callum, what were your thoughts at the time? Was there anything that you kind of took away from the game in particular that's maybe kind of made you more positive after the downturn that we had in form?
I mean, going into it, I didn't expect us to win, but I wanted a performance. I wanted some form of reaction. I wanted us to look like we had a game plan and we could execute it. And to be fair, we did that. We definitely, for the first 60 minutes or so, we genuinely looked like a decent European side. And credit to Lennon, because I didn't, going into last week, I didn't know if we had that in us for us to turn it around and put in a really disciplined performance where we weren't at sixes and sevens at the back and so on and had a bit of control in midfield. So I was delighted with the performance. The result, I mean, you'll take a point quite happily and it set us up quite nicely for Sunday. So yeah, the past week's definitely gone a long way to sort of, you know, easing some of my fears.
Yeah, kind of. I suppose that the Aberdeen game before it, we maybe saw a wee ray of sunshine, I suppose, give us something to be positive about. But the Lille game, hopefully, I think it's going to prove to be the kind of catalyst for the real change in form that we've seen. It was, you know, we did tire in the game a bit and they brought on some of their better players and we had players running on empty. And to lose a 2-goal lead, I suppose, you know, no one wants to do that. It's frustrating. But at the same time, you need to remember that Lille are a very good team. I mean, they brought on some of their best players in that second half. Taking a point away, again, French team in the Europa League, very reminiscent of what we'd done last year against Rennes, and it really kind of kicked us on. Are you feeling a bit better about Europe, Somani, after that game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one because I'm sure everybody on here beforehand, before the game, would have bitten their hand off for a point. I said before it as well, I was just looking for a reaction. But at the same time, I'm still disappointed to throw away a 2-goal lead in Europe. Now, on the flip side of that, I thought we were going to lose everything, so I was still quite pleased we got a point, but there was part of me thinking, you know, we shouldn't do this. You know, I mean, it's for me, it wasn't. I think when the game starts to unfold, even though what you thought you wanted beforehand, when that happens and you go 2-0 up, you can't help but look back and go, that was naive, that wasn't good, that wasn't great. Now, the Aberdeen game at the week, not just on Sunday there, but the Sunday before, there had been some positives there. There was positives on Thursday. And then we built again on those positives on Sunday in the cup semi-final. So overall, as part of the comeback, if you will, that we're trying to build here, it was another step, it was another building block, but it wasn't without its issues, the performance for me. But overall, I'd rather see the positive in it than the negative. I think that's the only way you can look at it.
Yeah, we have been super negative and critical and, you know,
just me and you normally, but...
Aye, usually us. But to be fair, it's been warranted. Everybody's been the same. It does feel as if there's a difference, though. There's a difference in not just the fans, but the atmosphere around the club since maybe the dark days of the Derby defeat. So I think that's fair, Barry.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us were saying that the way Lennon came out last week in the press, and it was almost sort of... he was questioning the motives of the press and stuff like that. And I think we all said it was good to see him come out fighting. And it's almost as if it's kind of galvanised the squad. And Lennon's done it in the past before where he does this sort of siege mentality. And I think we'd all been kind of crying out for that with the COVID stuff before the Rangers game. But whatever he's been doing in the past week or so in training or whatever it's been, it seems to be working. And I hope it's something, as Samani said, it's building blocks. But I hope we really kick on now because there's been a lot of encouraging signs in the last two games. And as you say, Louis, some of the Aberdeen game the first time, certainly going forward, we look more like our old selves.
See, just very quickly to jump in, you used the word siege mentality there, Barry. I must admit, I'm feeling a bit like that now. I don't know if it's the recent games or recent events or whatever, but I'm starting to feel that. I mean, previously, my criticism and my anger was directed towards the management. Now it's almost like our backs are against the wall a wee bit, and I think you can see that Celtic fans are getting a wee bit, you know, they're getting their bravado back a wee bit, shall we say, and that siege mentality is building through the support. So, well, maybe it isn't. It certainly is for me, though. I'm starting to feel a wee bit more.
But you could see that. You could see that in the players, though, at the weekend in the Aberdeen game. I mean, yeah. they had a swagger about them at times.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe brushing off. I mean, and the support are picking up on that. But I definitely feel differently about the side just now than I did last week. I just thought I would put that in there.
Callum, I was just going to bring up the fact that we looked organised against Lille. Like, unbelievably frustrating. Like the Rangers game, I thought we just looked so devoid of any structure. And yet, we were very structured in the Lille game. We looked like a unit. We looked well-drilled. And like you said earlier, we looked like a proper European team. That surely wasn't done over a couple of training sessions between games. I mean, why did we not see that earlier?
I knew that, then I'd be earning a lot more money than I am. But I was also pleased in the Aberdeen game at the weekend that we again showed a decent shape and a decent structure in the second half. We controlled the game without even having the ball. It was a much more mature performance than we've perhaps seen in recent weeks, where games have got away from us a little bit. Whereas I think we showed at the weekend that, you know, we don't necessarily need to dominate possession in order to control a game. And I think that was one of the things that I really took away from the weekend, that we built on Lille, we built on the organised structure. And again, you know, it would have been great to go out and score two or three in the second half against Aberdeen. I think we'd have all loved that. But it was really pleasing to see that we, you know, controlled the space. There wasn't any big gaps. We weren't giving up, you know, sloppy chances. And it was definitely something to build on. But I don't want to go too overboard, but it does still feel very fragile right now. And I know we'll come on to discuss Sparta Prague at home. But we really need to build on it. Otherwise, this whole past week is probably for nothing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, 4-2-3-1-3-5-2. It's not a Govan Hill phone number. It's a couple of formations that we've been flirting with and going in between. 4-2-3-1 is the one, but this gets the best out of the players, or certainly some players.
We look much more assured. We look much more like we know what we're doing. Players look like they know what their roles are in that formation, and it's definitely got the best out of some of our better players. Moya Winus has been excellent in the past two games, and looks like he's really starting to recapture that form of, you know, this time last year when he was excellent against Hibs in the League Cup semi. He looks like he's really coming onto a game since he's back in his most natural position. And the midfield as well, just there looks like there's more structure there. Looks like we're not losing the ball and an attack breaks down and all of a sudden everyone's sprinting to get back, and it looks really, really dodgy.
I think you're right, Callum, but I think when we play the 4-2-3-1, you could argue that the only player playing out of position purely because of necessity is Christie. And he's actually putting in a shift there. Whereas 3-5-2, you've got centre-half like Duffy, who's not used to that, getting dragged everywhere. And then you're asking a lot of Frimpong to be your main creative output on the right. But just to go back to what Callum said, the relationship between Laxalt and Moy Elyounoussi, I think, is where a lot of our success is coming from the last couple of games. One going inside, one going outside, and then even switching sometimes. So I think 4-2-3-1 is the best way to go. Whether that changes, I know Gal spoke yesterday on the agenda about Lennon might be tempted to go back to the 3-5-2 when he's got his first three fit centre-halves, and also to get Ayeti in alongside Eddie. But I think there's a place for that. I think certain home games in the league, there'll be a place for 3-5-2, but for me, it's 4-2-3-1 all the way.
So, Manny, is there anything that you would ideally change at this point, or are you quite happy and settled in the 4-2-3-1?
I'm happy with the 4-2-3-1. The main issue I've got is the right-hand side of midfield. Spoke on the reaction a bit about Christie, and we might talk about him. Don't think we've got that much choice but to play him there, but there's two things. One, I think he's far less effective than he is in the middle when he plays on the right. And two, he loses the ball. I mean, we'll come and talk about Christie and things like that, but he just needs to slow things down and hold on to the ball a bit more. He's to get undoubted quality. But right now, everything's just happening at 100 miles an hour, and that kind of limits him a wee bit out there. You will get a shift, as Barry says, out of him, but I think you negate some of his qualities by playing him out there, and that's a problem, especially when we've got Forrest going in for an operation. We're light there. And that's probably my only concern about sticking with that formation.
Yeah, I actually think Christie's been a lot better this season on the right than he was last season. I know we tried it for about a month last December, but I think you still get that energy and drive out of Christie on the right, which you'd lose if you were to take him out of the team entirely. But I quite like the fact that he doesn't need to be the focal point of the midfield, where you want someone like Tam or Ncham or whoever to put their foot on the ball a little bit and have a little bit more guile. And I think Christie can get away with playing at 100 miles an hour a little bit more when he's shifted out wide. Whereas, you know, if you bring him in, I think you can see that he feels the pressure to try create in that 10 space when he's played there, and he knows he's the focal point and has to create. I think he forces it a little bit. I thought at the weekend he even played a great ball in for Eddie in the first 5 minutes. You could see him drifting in off the right, and I think because he's got Tam there as well, he knows that the pressure's not all on him to try unlock a defence, and I thought he looked a little bit more comfortable in that position. And he hasn't always looked brilliant playing outright, but I think in the past few games it certainly suited him.
If Forrest was in the team, would you play him in the middle, Cal? If you could get Christie in, do you think you would miss him if you didn't have him in that team? Because I think so. I think you need that drive.
You'd miss him, but I don't know who you drop.
Scott Brown all day.
Probably, but I can't see Neil Lennon playing Christie as an eight. I think an eight is probably the best way. That's how you get the best out of Christie. You get his drive and his endeavour, but you also get his quality. But I don't really see Lennon doing that. You know, he played as an eight under Rodgers, and it certainly worked when he first broke into the team. But I just can't see Lennon playing him in that sort of position. I think he views him as a player higher up the park.
One man who is the greatest, not the greatest, but the greatest, is Diego Laxalt. What a couple of games this boy's had. Finally bringing a bit of balance to the left side, or a team overall with Frimpong on the right hand side. He very much looks like what we've been missing. Is that fair?
I think he looks really sort of tailor made for playing for us and the system that we're doing. Gal's just in there in the chat about proving a point about Laxalt. Sorry about Taylor, I'm getting confused there because I said tailor made. But yeah, it just gives us another dimension, because everything, as I mentioned earlier, seemed to be going down our right hand side with Frimpong, and teams were doubling up with him on him. But having Laxalt now, and what kind of surprised me about him is that he doesn't just bomb down the outside. He's more than happy to come inside, and he's comfortable. He actually looks comfortable in both feet because he can pick a pass with his right foot as well. And it just gives us another option, another sort of thing in our armour to attack teams. And the fact that we've gone to a back four as well, he's surprised me with how good he is defensively. And I think we all saw that he got the record for the most number of tackles in a Europa League game. So really positive so far, and I just hope it continues, because with him on the left and Frimpong on the right, it's a sort of mouthwatering proposition for the rest of the season.
You'd have to expect that he's going to get better as well, because he didn't really play much football recently before he came to us. So you'd kind of expect him to maybe settle in a bit more. We might not get the best out of him for a while yet, which is a scary prospect.
Yeah, I mean, I think I touched on some of this after the Aberdeen game, but when he first came in, his first game against Rangers, nobody was up to standard that day, but he was the least worst, if you will, in my eyes. He came in and impressed right away. And then he's continued to build on that. The thing about him is he's good defending, he's good going forward, and he doesn't shirk out of a tackle. Now, in Scotland, that's something that you need to be able to do if you don't want the crowd to be on your back, if we were in the stadium, that is. So he seems to have all the attributes to be successful in our game. You're right, Louis, he might not even be up to speed yet, and that's an even greater sign. But the one thing for me that's really pleasing about it is El Yunusi. If we're going to play this system and you're going to have El Yunusi and Laxalt on that left-hand side, I think they complement each other. I think El Yunusi's work rate will help Laxalt out at times, and obviously El Yunusi will have more freedom to do what he needs to do when he knows that he's got Laxalt behind him. So I really think they could complement each other and be going to be an important part of our season. So
the likes of Moy, right? What you said about Moy, because we've been kind of critical of him, of course, because he hasn't hit the heights that we've kind of expected from him so far until recently. But it is no coincidence, as you say, that we're getting the best out of him now that we've changed our formation, that he's more suited to. Is it just a case of you've got quality there, but you're not going to see it unless you put it in the right situation? Because that is very much what it seems to be like for him. You could even say that Duffy's improved in the last couple of games. I mean, he's got a lot more issues which are just kind of all on him, and I think it's more psychological than anything else. But clearly we've adapted the style, which now means that we're getting a tune out of some of these players.
I think a huge part of it's just Moy playing in his natural position and us being a lot less rigid on the left-hand side. When Greg Taylor was in the team, and I don't want to slag off Greg Taylor too much, but he stayed out on that touchline and would not want to come in. He would not want to dribble inside. He would not want to drift into that sort of half space and leave space outside him for either El Yunusi or Calmac to operate in. And it became really predictable. Teams are quite content with Greg Taylor having the ball, knowing that he'd pop it back inside. Just even introducing that sort of element of unpredictability. You saw El Yunusi's goal at the weekend. He's drifted in off the left-hand side and ended up popping up at the back post off cross coming in off the left. It gives him that freedom to do that, knowing that he doesn't need to basically stay roughly in his position out on the left side to sort of help Greg Taylor out. He's got a bit more freedom now because he knows Laxalt can handle himself out there on his own. And I think it's really sort of unleashed El Yunusi as a result.
There's probably a lot to be said for relationships on a football pitch, and we don't probably have a great understanding of it because we've not played the game. But I mean, we've seen it previously with on the left-hand side with Kieran Tierney and Scott Sinclair, that, you know, they really played well together. We've probably been missing that a wee bit. It looks like Laxalt and Moy could be quite, you know, they could be really good together on the left. And then you've got Frimpong and Forrest on the right, who are a wee bit more suited to each other because they've played that. There's possibly a bit of that. We had a lot of chopping and changing, and you know, I don't know if we've played the same starting 11 at all this season, have we? So could it be little things like that, that if we get the same players playing together for long enough, we might get the best out of them?
Definitely. Yeah. Sorry, Samani. I was just going to say, the only time I can remember us keeping the same starting 11 two games in a row was when Lennon fucked it against Ferencváros, and then he kept the same team for the following game after that. But yeah, I think the relationships are really important, Louis, as you were saying. And I actually think Frimpong is enjoying playing with Christy because Christy tends to go inside, which frees Frimpong up to go on the outside. So yeah, hopefully we can get a bit of stability and try and keep the same sort of nucleus of the starting lineup together for a number of games, and then hopefully we'll bear the benefit of that.
I think you can only get more consistent when you start playing with the same players all the time. You're exactly right. I think you can, on the left hand side, El Yunusi and Laxalt complement each other. And I think, as you said, Louis, when Forrest comes back, I think that Frimpong will, you know, benefit from an actually right sided player. The point that Barry made there about Christy, I would accept as well. Obviously, he comes inside, which would give Frimpong the chance to bomb forward. But it just seems a system that the players seem more comfortable with. And I mean, we might be, there is a possibility that we're reading too much into it, and it's just that they've got some confidence back by playing this or whatever. It may be, and we might touch on it, that Lennon kind of moved us a wee back into the 3-5-2 towards the tail end of the game, so it's maybe not something that he's completely abandoned. But right now, this is the way we need to go, because we definitely seem to be getting more out of players who were underperforming up until now.
Yeah, I'm trying to say that the first half against Aberdeen was the best we've played this season. Going forward.
Probably, although it's really slim pickings, to be fair. You've got Hibs at home, you've got the first day of the season, and beyond that, you're looking at flashes on moments, nothing consistent. So, yeah, I was delighted with the first half performance. I don't think we completely tore them apart. I think there's a lot more to come from this side. I didn't come away from it thinking, you know, we've really played at our top level today. It certainly looked like a side getting back to their best, but I think we've seen enough to know that, you know, there's still a lot more to come. You know, Eddie showed flashes, but clearly still wasn't at 100%. There's other wee kinks within that midfield that you probably want to work out in the coming weeks. And I'm hoping now that we'll kick on against Sparta Prague. But it was probably probably our best performance attacking wise first half.
It was so many. Obviously, we were on the reaction and spoke about it. Has your opinion changed any more since, like, you know, having time to think about it? It gets better for me, probably. I just can't help but get out of my head the fact that we just looked a lot more like ourselves. We just looked a lot more like the Celtic team that we've seen in the last few years. It was exciting, kind of exciting to watch again for the first time in a while.
Yeah, the first half when it was clicking. I mean, see, I think what happens when you get two goals so close together and you've been playing well like that, you know, the confidence gets up and things start to become more natural. There was no need for us to force it at that time. It was just, as you say, it was a bit like when we had been playing previously. I think the muscle memory kicked in with some of the players in terms of their performance and things. I touched on this as well in the reaction on Sunday, though, and I think Callum mentioned it at the start. The second half pleased me as much as the first half because nothing really happened. I think we just saw it out. You know, it was, that's the one thing about the games previous. We'd been conceding goals. We'd been kind of just, you know, was it 10 in 4 games, was it, we'd lost? And then for us to maybe not hit the heights attacking-wise as we did in the first half, but to see it out the way we did in the second half was really pleasing. I didn't at any point think we looked in danger. Now, Aberdeen did come forward and there was a couple of points whereby they looked a wee bit threatening. But overall, I thought, no, I think we're in control of this. And that's a huge step forward because you're going to need to do that in most games this season.
Barry, just good to be positive for a change, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing how your mood changes, I think. I was like buzzing all Sunday after it, and there was a one wee passage of play. I can't remember if you guys mentioned it on the reaction, but I think it came from Bain, like a kick out from Bain, and it was just one touch passing, and then Brown just kind of overhit the pass to Eddie. It had been through, and just after that, I was just like thinking, this is how it should be, because I think we all said that we were all delighted with our business in the transfer window, and it was just a case of waiting for it to click. And I think Sunday went a long way to sort of getting to where we think we should be. So, as we've all said previous to this, I think it's a case now of using this as a sort of catalyst to go on a run now, because we certainly need to do that.
I think we always like to try and be as balanced as we can. Obviously, we're a very emotional podcast, so when things go wrong, we kind of go mental. But, you know, certain players that we've criticised, the likes of Duffy, for example, Duffy looks as if he's getting better and keeping things simpler, and you can see a wee bit of progress. Callum, you're smiling. Am I talking shite?
To be fair, my initial impression from watching the game was I thought he'd had a much better game. I thought his passing was better. That big diagonal that he keeps attempting, he even managed one of those right after we scored. And he didn't look as exposed in the back four. And I thought Beaton in beside him was really good as well, to be fair. And then I watched some of the highlights back today, and there's a couple of dodgy moments in the second half where Duffy gets dragged right out of position when he doesn't need to, especially one near the end and the ball gets slipped in between Beaton and Laxalt, and Beaton sort of has it covered and Duffy comes charging across. The boy pops the ball inside and I think Frimpong needs to come across and block the shot, and I think he's trying a bit too hard currently to have a sort of, we've talked about it in the past with Barkas needing a moment to sort of kick on from and take real confidence from. I think Duffy's searching for that currently as well, that moment where it begins to click or change for him, and I think he's rushing into things when he doesn't need to be. But it was definitely a much better performance than recent weeks, but watching some of the stuff back today, I sort of reassessed my opinion of how he played. It wasn't perfect, but it was at least building blocks again. It was at least something that you can build on.
Callum, am I right in saying you're in Berlin right now?
Yeah, correct.
Dedrick Boyata, bomb scare or good guy?
Weirdly, I've got a mate who works for a sort of German football agency that they do the sports reporting, and he was saying to me that in his office, outside of, you know, the centre backs at Dortmund and Munich, all his German colleagues think Boyata is the best centre half in the league, and he's just been made their captain. But any time I've watched him, he's either given away a penalty or done something absolutely wild.
I fucking hate the guy, but hate's a strong word, but he's always going to be a bomb scare and a rat for me, but I just thought I'd throw that in there when we're talking about our current bomb scare, Duffy. So Manny, you were wanting in there?
I was just to go back on to Duffy. He was better, and I think in terms of recovery, if you will, that was a far more assured performance than he's shown in the last few games. But I would agree with Callum. There's been, you know, there were still moments where the positioning didn't look particularly good. I think Beaton overall was good as well, but there was a few times where he was slacking possession. So without, you know, the overall theme here is positivity. Hey, and I'm not going to change that too much. But, you know, there was some signs there that we still have work to do, especially steadying the ship at the back. It was far more pleasing for me, but overall, you know, we can do better in building that, and I think that'll be important.
Sorry, Barry, on you go.
I was just going to say, I think Callum kind of had it spot on, that see when he keeps it simple and he does the basics, it looks fine, but I think he is so eager to please, to have that moment to say, look, I can do this. That's what makes him get dragged out to unfamiliar positions. He's just desperate to make a crunching tackle or have a really sort of breakthrough moment of this is his Celtic career arrived. But he doesn't have to do that. All he needs to do is just keep it simple and let our ball playing centre halves, which we have a few of, let them do that side of the game. But he should just win it and give it to them, and maybe try the odd diagonal every second game, because that was a thing of beauty, the one that Callum was talking about.
The one thing that we've kind of been crying out for a long time on the Cynic is a bit of creativity. Tam's back. He's officially back. I don't know. I had to do it on the reaction. I should probably do it now. I deserve a hell of a lot of credit. It was me that turned this around. I threw him under the bus, rolled over him a couple of times. He took it personally, and he's came back. I've inspired the man to the greatest form of his career. He's got four hands. His name's Tam. What more do you want, Slimani? He is the greatest.
I'm still feeling a wee bit bad for calling you thick at the start of this. And I did it, and, you know, see, it didn't come out the way I wanted it to. I wanted it to be light-hearted, but it did sound a bit nasty. So I won't call you out as much as I was going to do for your flip-flopping and Tam, to be perfectly honest here. But come on, Lou. Even you must have a bit of your idea about this one. And we do. We know why he's come into form as well, because I called for his inclusion in the team. You threw him under the bus. I picked him up, dusted him off, and says, Sam, get your four hands on. You're in the team. You're going
he doesn't detach them at night, for fuck's sake.
He does, actually. And obviously, so far, he's turning our season around. So we'll leave that up to people out there.
Listen, I'll be honest, since it's the weekly, I can't fucking believe it. Like, I literally threw him under a bus. Finally, I thought he was done. And then he turns around and somehow becomes... It's honestly to spite me, I think. The whole thing is to spite me and make me look stupid. So, aye. But listen, he's back and he's beautiful. At the weekend, got two assists. That's four assists in his last couple of games. But as I say, it's what we've been crying out for. I should never have said it because I've said it before. He is the only one who can play in the 10 and play that role properly, I think. And it's what we've been missing, someone in there. I mean, the way that he links the midfield and the strikers, the fact that he's there means that the strikers don't need to drop as deep to try and get the ball. And, you know, you've got somebody like Christie on the right-hand side. That whole kind of space that I don't know, is that the 10 space? I can't remember. But that space between the midfield and the strikers, Tam's in there. So Christie knows right away that, because I think the two of them have got a great relationship. He seemed to find them quite a lot. I think Tam being in that role has really been a massive turning point for us. My only worry is that if he's not fit, we don't have anybody that we can use to replicate that. So Tam he's became pretty essential to how we play right now.
I was just going to say, Slimani mentioned earlier about Christie and the sort of deficiency that he has is that he tries to do everything at 100 miles an hour. And I think that's why sometimes he loses the ball quite easily or gives it away, because he's always trying to think two or three moves ahead. Whereas Tam is sort of the opposite. Tam, it seems the world stops when Tam gets the ball because he just kills it dead. And then with a slight touch or two, he can play someone in. So, as you said, Louis, they complement each other well because it's sort of that chaos and then the calmness. But I agree. I think Tam is essential for us to play this way presently. There is options in there, but no one gives us what Tam does, just the guile and the vision that he has.
Everything goes through him, though. Yeah. Like, it just attracts the ball. All the play seems to go through him. And that's probably something that we've been missing, because you would probably say everything's been going through, say, Callum McGregor, but he's deeper in the pitch. So positionally, it must be benefiting us to have someone further up the pitch that can link a play as well as him.
Yeah, I was going to finish off by saying that because he is so good on the ball, like McGregor playing that sort of deeper role, he can fire the ball to Tam because he knows Tam's touch is so good and kill it dead and bring others in. And I think because his touch is so good, the rest of the team are really confident in giving him the ball, and he just makes things happen, and he's a joy to watch.
I think it was overlooked in the 3-3 game at Pittodrie, but that Callum McGregor goal that he set up was the first time I remember in a long time us cutting open a defence that was in a low block. I know we scored a very good goal against Hibs when we cut them open with a Yeti, but it's been so long that we've actually threaded a pass through and split a team open that's in, you know, a relatively compact defensive shape. And just being able to have that option on the park, domestically at least, you know, I'd be playing him in the majority of domestic games because he just gives you something that we don't have. And it allows the players like Calmack or Christie to have the confidence to know that if they give the ball to him, they can make that run and he's going to find them. Whereas before, I think a lot of our play was sort of, we'll get it out wide and hopefully that a Frimpong or Amoy or someone can do something. I think it just certainly makes your other midfield runners a lot more assured, knowing that, you know, if you give the ball to him, he'll find a way to hopefully pick you out. And having that trust and relationship with your other midfield two or three, I think is really, really important.
He's
the right man for us at this moment. He's the right man, and it's the right time for him. Let's not rewrite history, right? There's people that are fans of Tam, and there's people that aren't fans of Tam, or more critical of him. That's probably the best way to put it. He hasn't been great. Combination of injuries, combination of form for some time just now. So there's always people calling, I don't know why he wasn't in the team just now anyway. There was a reason why he wasn't in the team, because he wasn't performing at the level that he can. However, when Tam... See, the best form we've had, even under the rat, is when Tam's on form. Now, you're talking about Christie. Replicate that in the first season under the rat, and you had Sinclair coming in. Tam used to do those passes that Callum's talking about, where we would cut through the low block, 1-2s with Sinclair. He'd do the same with Robertson Forrest on the right-hand side of the midfield. When he's fully ticking, certainly domestically, because the pace and the setup is different in Europe, and that's probably why he didn't start against Lille. But domestically, if you can get that out of him and you can get that consistency, he really, really does make a difference. And he also brings other players into the play. You'll see El Yunusi benefit from that. You'll see Christie benefit from it. And you'll see Forrest benefit from it when he comes back. The caveat all the time with Tam, though, is how long is he going to stay fit? How long are we going to be able to rely on him? And that you're saying we can't replace him, because you can't get players like Tam, really, with that bit extra. You know, he's got deficiencies, which is why he still plays for us. But replacing that will be really, really difficult. So for me, he has to stay in the team just now. But I'm always kind of bristling just in case something happens to him, because he has been central to this mini recovery that we've had. He'll be central to it if we continue to build on it going forward. But there's part of me thinking, when's he going to drop out, just because of history, basically?
There's no doubt that we have a lot more belief. I think the fans have a lot more belief. There's an air of positivity about the place. You can see the players look more organised. They look as if they're more confident. Are we turning a corner, or have we turned a corner? And if we're still turning, how long is it going to take before you're fully confident that that bad run of form is in the past and we're over it? Anyone?
I think it has to be a run. So I think we need to make sure we're winning our home games in Europe and starting on Thursday. But then coming on to Sunday, Sunday's massive, and it's always a big game going to Motherwell away, because some of the games we've had there in the past. But just because I think every single point now, I think we need to win every game. I was going to say up until Ibrox, but for the rest of the season, because they don't look like they're going to drop many points this year. So in answer to your question, I think if we look in 2 or 3 weeks and we've had a run of sort of 4 or 5 wins in the trot, then I think we can say we've definitely turned the corner. But I would caveat that with saying the performances have to be good as well, because we were on a great run of wins before the Rangers game, but the performances were dog shit. And I think all of us and the cynics sort of said that you can only go so long until those performances catch up with you, and my God, how they did catch up with us. So I think going around a 4 or 5 games, and more so, but after 4 or 5 games, we can say we've turned the corner, providing the performances are good.
Yeah, I think if we get to the next international break, having won all of our games, then you can start to say that. But it still feels very fragile right now. If we go on and lose on Thursday night, then all the knives are back out and all the problems are still there. And that's why I think Thursday's massive, not only because you want to do well in the Europa and so on, but it's the kind of side that we've struggled against. It's a decent European side that we're probably expected to beat on paper. But, you know, we've shown that we can go away to a decent European side and take a point or get a result. We've shown that domestically over the past few years that we can more than see off the likes of Aberdeen on Sunday and, you know, the best teams in our league and so on. But Thursday's a real test because that's probably where we've fallen short. Your Cluj's and your Copenhagen's and so on, and I'd probably put Sparta in you know, a similar bracket to them. I want to see that we've learned our lesson. I want to see that we're not being naive. I want to see that we've got a game plan and can stick to it and aren't doing anything wild, that we can go out there and show that, you know, we're not just a better side on paper, that, you know, we can actually translate that onto the park as well. I think it makes Thursday night massive when it probably wouldn't be if the context was slightly different.
I think we are... Sorry, Lou, do you want to come in?
Oh. No, I was just going to... I was just going to bring up a point about Lennon before we go on to look at those two games, but on you go, Samani.
Well, I suppose it was on Lennon, that maybe not the same point, but just to kind of come in on that. As much as we're not thinking about it, it was a short few weeks ago that there were several members of the Cynic calling for Lennon's head, albeit...
You were leading the charge?
No. I was... You were my right-hand.
Lennon out now, is what you said.
You were my right-hand man there. No, it was a wee bit more caveated than just saying Lennon out now.
You're never that straightforward. You sit there to sit in the fence anyway, and say that you flip-flop. Anyway, on you go.
Anyway, we are a fickle support, as most football fans are. So even though we're not thinking or talking about that at all, and I don't think anybody is at the moment, he's still on trial, Lennon, really, in terms of they're still on probation after that run of games. And Callum's exactly right. People have talked dismissively of the Europa League. Me too. All of us are consistently thinking, I've mentioned, oh, that game's coming up. I wish it wasn't there. But it's now part of the run. This is the perceived weaker group of the team. Weaker team of the group, sorry. And for us at home, even though there's no fans, to not beat them, especially after what we've done in Lille and as part of our forward momentum, would kind of stall our progress. So I'm the same. I think we need to win, and I think we need to win fairly well on Thursday. Motherwell's going to be a hard, hard, tough game. Maybe not, because they're not obviously the greatest technical side, but we know what they're going to do to us. They're going to be physical. They're going to kick us up and down that park. It's Scotland. The pitch is probably going to be bogging as well. It's going to be peanut rain, no doubt, all the way up to that. So this is a tough, tough ask, but we need to do it. We need to get a performance and a result on Thursday and again on Sunday, and then we need to go yet again to Easter Road after that. But I think anything less than 3 wins up until the international break is, and Hibs is before the international break, isn't it? Yeah, I've not got that wrong. Yeah, I think we need to win these 3 games. Otherwise, I wouldn't say the knives will be out, but people will start murmuring. There'll be murmurings again.
See, before we move on to look at or talk a wee bit more about the Sparta game and the Motherwell game, just to round off the, because obviously the Aberdeen game was a cup semi-final. We're now in the final, aiming to do the quadruple treble. We're in the final against Hearts just before Christmas on the 20th of December. You know, it extends our run to 35 cup games unbeaten. Yet another final for this team. You know, I think there's to a certain extent, the quadruple treble pursuit has been lost in the noise of 10 in a row, and that was probably always going to happen because of the way things have worked out with COVID and it being delayed. But on Lennon, I mean, as you say there, Samani, you know, we were very critical of him and we are fickle, but I mean, Lennon, we have to give him credit for the fact that he won that semi-final. He deserves the credit for the performance that happened and the fact that he's got us to another final, doesn't he?
Yeah, I'll let some of the other guys come in very quickly on that, but that's the thing. It's as simple as that. You get the credit when we win and you get the criticism when we lose. Just very quickly on the quadruple treble as well, you know, we can't shy away from 10 in a row because it's been the Celtic supporters' war cry for many a season now. So see to turn around now and not put as much credence on it, that would be totally disingenuous. However, we need to pause and reflect on the fact that if we win this cup final, we've won 4 trebles in a row, 9 titles in a row and 4 trebles in a row. That's unbelievable. And those 4 trebles came when Rangers came back into the league, when the league was you know, previously they've talked about how the some of the titles we won, you know, they weren't there and the league wasn't as strong. From the minute they came back into this league, we've won every single trophy. And I think sometimes we should pause and think about how remarkable that is.
Yeah, I think Lennon deserves a lot of credit. I remember walking out the ground after we'd sealed the treble and the news started filtering through that Lennon had been made full-time manager. And everyone was a little bit deflated and there was a sense that that's the party over. You know, we've had a good run of our three trebles, but that's probably not going to happen again now. So fair play to him for proving, I'd say, probably the majority of Celtic fans wrong. And it's incredible to go that many games. It's the equivalent of a full season. And not only that, but all bar one, we've won them within the 90 minutes. Dunfermline in the League Cup, I think, is the only one where we've not seen them off within the 90 minutes, which is absolutely incredible, an incredible level of consistency. And to continue to do that, you can't do anything but give them credit for it, definitely.
The Sparta game, Sparta are currently top of their domestic league after six matches played. They are top by a couple of points. In the Europa League so far, they have suffered a 4-1 loss to Lille at home. And then they went to Milan last game day and they lost 3-0. I mean, if you look at that, they kind of look as if they're maybe the whipping boys of the league. But I mean, I don't know if anybody's got much insider knowledge or has seen any of them, but I just never think that we should be taking any of these games for granted. I personally am expecting a bit of a kind of tough game because, you know, the Ferencváros game, for example, isn't too far away in the memory. But should we be a wee bit more optimistic? Should we be trying to kind of put down a marker? You'd have to assume we need 6 points.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you've got to think that the confidence and the sort of the positivity that we are displaying, albeit with the back of our mind that it's early days, but you've got to hope that the players have taken confidence in the way they've played the last two games. And I think if we go out and we can play our natural game, then hopefully it should be enough to take care of them. But I think Callum said earlier, how many times have we looked at games and thought, right, there's points that we'll get at home. I think like Anderlecht at home after we'd gone away and beaten them. And it's a shame to see because our home record was always what a recent success of the last 20 years or so has been built on. But it actually seems now that when we go away from home in Europe, we seem more comfortable. But to keep the positivity going, I think feeling confident going into the game and hopefully we can take care of business to set us up perfectly for Sunday.
Is there any, you know, for I suppose this counts for both games, but although you maybe have different personnel, as Salmani says, domestic Tam could potentially drop out, although I don't see that happening for the Sparta game. Is there anybody that you'd like to see included that's currently not, or anybody you'd like to see get a bit of game time at some point?
Personally, I'd like to see Tam back in again on Thursday. I've not watched any of Sparta Prague, but I was speaking to Stephen, part of the Cynic group chat this afternoon, who does all the tactical analysis pods, and he said, you know, they came out against Milan away and Lille at home and had the right go and pressed them high up the park. That says to me we need good technical, I mean, I know the old phrase technicians on the park, but it does sound to me like if we can break through that press, then we'll get some joy. It's maybe a game where I don't know if we need Brown. He's played two high intensity games in the space of 4 days. I don't know if three in a week's maybe a bit too much, and you maybe want him for Motherwell away at the weekend as well. So maybe bringing in Chamin for Brown is one, and then the other I'd maybe bring Barkas back in, because I think the longer you leave it, the more that becomes a bigger decision the longer you leave it. I think it's probably a nice time that you can justify it to Bain to put him back in and even give Bain the cup final if you want, but I think the longer it goes on where Barkas is sitting on the bench, the more scrutiny he'll get when he comes back in at the team. So it's maybe a nice time to ease him back in as well.
So, Manny, just before you came in, just to highlight the Team Talk podcast, which is opposition scouting from the team at the Cynic, that will be out tomorrow. That drops tomorrow ahead of the game. So you can get that at the Cynic Co or whatever it is, www. If we're still doing that. There you go.
Yep. Listen to the Team Talk. Stephen's a very talented and intelligent analyst. Even I listen to it, and I don't think stats and tactics and all that are rubbish when he talks about them, just when Christian does it, to be perfectly honest. But I also would start Tam. There's certain European...
European Tam?
For this one. Tam's good for qualifiers and low-level European ties. Slot him right in for this one. If he comes out, I haven't seen much of them either, as Callum says, but if they're coming out to give it a go, you know, I think Tam could find some space and gaps to exploit there on the very limited basis that you said they might come out and give it a go, Callum. That's my tactical analysis. So I'd start him as well. Barkas, I don't think Bain... Some people would say that Bain's come in and done well. I don't think he's come in and nailed that first team spot down. I mean, he really got away with one against Leo when they hit the bar, when he dropped it at the edge of the box. Some of the saves he made in Leo were unorthodox, to say the least. He did keep the ball out of the net, so I suppose that's all you want him to do, but he doesn't inspire confidence in me. Now, Barkas has looked like a bag of nerves up until now, but I don't think that you can kind of totally write him off. I'm not saying I would bring him back in, but I wouldn't be upset if he was started there. 26-year-old international goalkeeper, new country and all that, it could just be that. Lack of consistency in front of him and the fit in the defence maybe affected his confidence. So if we're starting to tighten things up at the back, or at least hoping to do that, it might be that Barkas can come back in. But that wouldn't be a must for me. That would be an either or. If I seen Barkas in the lineup, I'd be fine. Same with Bain.
Barry, I knew you were going to come in there. That's why he was telepathic. I was just wanting to get your thoughts on Motherwell, because, you know, as kind of alluded to earlier, it's a massive game, and, you know, especially if we're looking to kind of continue this run of form. We played them on the 30th of August at home. We won 3-0 on that day. I think Turnbull had just signed, and I think he came on in the game. It was his first appearance in a Celtic top, did he not?
He was stripped and ready to come on, and then we got an injury and he had to sit back down again.
He didn't make it. That was obviously the game, that was the game just before the Ferencváros game. I won't take away the point you were going to make. You can batter in with that, but also, what are you expecting from Motherwell at the weekend? Do you think it's going to be tricky, or is it, you know, are we just a bit worked up because things have been a bit wrong?
The point I was going to make just before that was that usually that I think because Sunday's so big, you would be treating Thursday saying, right, there's maybe players that I wouldn't play to keep them fresh for Sunday, but for all the reasons that we've mentioned already, you need this game to sort of build the momentum and keep it going. I think it's always a worry going to Motherwell. It's just the sort of ghost of the past, always kind of a fresh in the memory going there. I know I've had a lot of joy there in the past as well, but every game this season is so heightened. But I think if we get a good convincing performance on Thursday night, then we go there all guns blazing, and we've got options now. I think we've seen nearly every game this season that our bench is so strong. Most of those players would get into the majority of the teams in the league. So, no, I think get through Thursday night and then go out and smash them. Because if you think back to the game just before lockdown, when McGregor and Eddie were excellent, I think we've got to take confidence from that and just kind of try and blow them away.
Anybody else? Anybody worried about the game? It kind of shows how far we've came. I think we would be a lot more nervous about this game if we hadn't had the Leo and Aberdeen games that have kind of turned around, you know, put a bit of belief in us again.
It depends on Thursday. If we drop points on Thursday, I'll be absolutely bricking it come kickoff on Sunday. But I think it's set up for Turnbull to potentially come in. You know, it's a ground he knows, it's a team he knows. He hasn't had a lot of game time. We probably will need to rotate it in the middle just with the run of games that we've been having. So it could be a good win for him to come in. And I'd imagine we'll maybe see a Yeti in for Eddie or vice versa, depending on who started on Thursday. But I think we've got more than enough quality that if we turn up on the day and continue the form that we've been showing, then it shouldn't be a problem. They're in relatively good form, and I think Stephen Robinson's a fairly good manager and can set up a side, but you know, we should have too much for them, provided we actually turn up.
We're going to wrap up shortly. We've got loads of questions on Twitter, so I just wanted to get through a few of them quick fire. So Manny, I'll come to you first. Daniel Connor 17 asks, would James Forrest with a neck be better than Lionel Messi?
The missing part of James Forrest's game is the neck. The lack of neck has probably held him back. I think that's a fair comment, Daniel. Yes.
Can I just say, was that Christian that sent that under the guys just to wind Alan up?
Christian with this old James Forrest seasons ago. He was meant to dip. Callum, Johnny Hayes, HTID. I don't think it's the real Johnny Hayes, but you never know. He asks, why do you think we're not seeing David Turnbull get game time so much?
I think it's just the nature of the season and the nature of the run that we've been in. I don't think it's an assessment of his ability or how he can contribute, but we've been really struggling for form, and Neil Lennon, when that happens, he goes to players that he trusts, and David Turnbull's not one of them yet, and I'm sure he probably will be in years to come, but I think it's just been unfortunate timing for David Turnbull. I wouldn't read into it too much more. I think we'll certainly see more of him in the coming weeks and months. But it's been a really tough period, and it's probably not the best time to try bed in a relatively young player making the step up to Celtic. So I understand it, even if it's frustrating.
Yeah, probably not a pressure that he personally needs either. Cammy Boy at Cameron Simpson, he asked me, have you managed to salvage the remains of Big Tam from under the bus? Okay, listen, Cammy. He has been going tonto at me for my comments on Tam, and I hold my hands up. Fair play to you, you know, take your shot, and you know that's all right. But I'm back on the Tam tram exactly. Barry Lewis Laird, the cynic's own Lewis Laird, asks, how much does the panel think Derek McInnes hates Tom Rogic? He must be living in his head rent free.
Oh God, aye. He must wake up in the middle of the night and just see Tam's face and. It's not a bad thing, actually. Probably woke up next to worse, to be honest. But he's just a scourge of Aberdeen, really, ain't he?
Apparently, he said after the game in an interview, McInnes had said that Tam didn't mean the cross. He said he mishit it or something like that as well. Which just about sums up Dent McInnes and all that he knows about football. But anyway.
An absolute fanny. So, this is one for the lot of us, actually. Tim Jong-Ong. Regular contributor. He says, which member of the cynic is most likely to get the Diego Cornrows first? My money's on Louis. Listen, if we win the 10, I'm happy to get Cornrows if that's what the people want to see.
Get the backwards cap on, Louis. You explained that that's on because you're growing the hair out.
The hair for the Cornrows.
Now we know why you're growing it out. See, you need to be rocking that by the next game at Ibrox. See if you've got the cornrows for that game. That'll be great.
I don't even know how it's done, but I'll endeavour to find out and try and see if my barber can do that. I don't think he can, to be honest with you. He's only ever used clippers, I think, this guy, but, you know.
Well, I don't think the cornrows and grey hair would look good, so that rules me out. So
I don't think it would look good on no hair, so that rules me out.
Yeah, there's a lot of balding men. There's a lot of balding men on the cynic, so there's a lot of people ruled out. I think that's it. We had a lot of other questions, but I think most of them we've kind of covered throughout the show. So thanks for sending those in. I think that's pretty much us. A positive podcast this week. I think there's an air of positivity through everything. Hopefully that continues with the games this week. But yeah, certainly better talking about this sort of stuff than it was a couple of weeks ago. We seem to just be getting worse and worse after a few results. Barry, absolute pleasure. You're a hero.
Thanks very much. And yeah, let's just hope the positivity continues and let's do this.
Callum, excellent debut. I'm sure you'll be back soon, hopefully.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. It's been nice to chat about Celtic when nobody else around me cares or knows it in the middle of Berlin. So ideal. Thank you.
Listen, see if you ever see big Dedrick walking down the street. I'd love you to slide tackle him for me.
I'll give him it tight. Don't worry.
Aye, please do. And Somani, the man who always flip-flops but somehow gets away with it. You've been a pleasure.
You know, the listeners know, flip-flop king, Louis McCaffrey. Pleasure to be here. See ye for, hopefully, a non-hysterical reaction on Sunday.
don't count on it. I've been your host as ever, Louis McCaffrey. This is the Cynic Weekly, and we will speak to you down the road.